I'm joined here today by Noah Levy, Managing Director of Prudential Real Estate Investors, and Chris Kazantis, Director of AEW Capital. Thank you both for joining me here today.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Now, there is no doubt that the senior housing sector is an exceptionally operationally intensive business. I think that one that incorporates obviously a bit of residential, a bit of almost hospitality, a little bit of healthcare. And it was actually described to me very recently as a kind of nickel and dime type business, but one that is really truly about the people. Now, I know you both have very strong views on the operational side of the business. So is it all down? Is a successful deal all down to the operator that you choose?
You know, this is an operational intensive business. And I also think it's a business that, you know, it's about caring for people. So I don't think you can just parachute into this industry and just say, oh, I think the demographics are great. I think the returns are phenomenal. I think I can get a lot of rent growth and I'm just going to make as much money as I possibly can and get in and get out. There are people that try and do that, but they're usually not successful over a period of time. Most people that are in this industry are in it because they have a passion for this industry. They care about seniors. They care about taking care of seniors and care about their family members. You need to have a culture in place and you need to hire the right people and the caring people to have that kind of culture in a community and in an organization. And I think the operators and the organizations that have that are the ones that are most successful.
One of the old saws in real estate is location, location, location. In our business, it's really operator, operator, location. And I think they're parroting what Chris is saying. You're only as good as your least happy employee. And so you need from top to bottom to have a real passion and a focus on the residents. These are the toughest customers you'll ever love. Not only a building full of folks who are 84, 85 with all their various issues and the fact that they're tough customers, but you're talking about all their families and friends, and really you're not just engaging in day-to-day services and care, and we're talking about support services, not health care, but you're also engaging families and a community. And I think that's a really tough thing. It's not like a hotel would be where people come in from one night and if they're not thrilled with a meal or the way the room laid out, they're not a big deal. We always say you can have a perfect building, but if you don't have the right people running it, it could be a lousy investment.
Right.
As opposed to you can have a less than bright, shiny penny, but if you've got great people, it could be a fabulous investment.
And you could see that. You go into marketplaces and you can see that. You can see buildings that are, you know, latest, greatest, all the amenities, and they're, you know, 70% leased. And then you see another building that might be a little bit older, might not have all the same amenities that that building is 100% leased.
Do you find in your experiences, obviously, you know, having done this for so long, that it's better to be with a smaller operator or perhaps a smaller regional local operator or perhaps a larger one? What are your experiences telling you?
I really think that the preponderance our investments have been with some of the smaller regional operators. But that we have had very good experiences with some of the larger operators as well. But it's just a matter of who needs capital and what scale and what scope. And frankly, you know, some of the folks have gotten so large that they've really, you know, they reach escape velocity. They
right.
perhaps don't need our equity. So that's really more the determinant thing. We want that intersection of a great operator with a great asset in the right market. And you want to be where those three circles, you know, to use a Venn diagram kind of analogy, you want those three circles to overlap. And sometimes we've had really good deals with larger operators, but they need to be able to pay attention to your investment, and you can get lost in a larger organization. That's not that they want to; it's just the nature of things.
And it goes both ways, right? On the smaller side, you know, there's some issues on the smaller side. It's great because they have focus and they can really drive that culture that I alluded to at the property, but they might not have as much back office, as much training, as much scale. And then on the larger side, you're going to have access to a lot more resources, if you will, but it's going to be harder for them to consistently have that kind of culture down to every single property. And so I think you can get too big in this industry. I think you can get to a point where you kind of lose it a little bit.
Talk to me about kind of the operations. What kind of facilities you need to produce, you know, the real estate? Do you need to be much more, you know, does it need to have more activities, more community, more healthcare, more, you know, computer games? How is it actually impacting, you know, your strategies, you know, this change in demographics?
These buildings sort of have had those things, and they can do, now obviously a newer building, you can build, say, you know, state-of-the-art you know, therapy rooms or exercise areas or bigger auditoriums and the like, you know. But still, older projects, if well maintained, can still do the same things. We are seeing more in the way of programming. I think it's important to be able to offer not just activities, but, you know, things that really engage the resident in the community. I also think it's important to have exercise facilities and availability for therapy in the building, things like that, even doctor's offices, visiting doctor's offices, so that people and residents can have more services sort of brought in to them, whether the operator themselves is actually the provider of the service or not.
Some of the biggest changes that I've seen just sort of like on memory care, right? I mean, memory care was always an afterthought before, which was horrible. I mean, people used to say, what's the least desirable units we have? And, you know, the ones with no views overlooking the parking lot, or, and we'll turn those into memory care. Right, and there wasn't very much programming, natural light, any of that, and it was just, they were basically warehousing people, and it was really a horrible environment. And now, I mean, that's evolved to a point where, you know, memory care is now like so state of the art, and where they're, you know, they're trying to get people and help them very early on stages to try and prevent the progression of the disease.
I do wonder, does this mean that you as obviously, you know, investors as allocators need to underwrite kind of more capex into your properties?
I think that's been one of the things that, and I do think some of the observers have been good on this point, which is for many, many years, we were living sort of with an underwritten, sort of a loan underwriting capex per unit, which was very, very low. And it is expensive to maintain these projects, in part because they are smaller, they're highly amenitized, and so you're spreading that FF&E dollars over a relatively few units. So the numbers per unit can be quite large. And you've got to be prepared to spend it. I think that's just the flat out, you know, the reality of it. And or you can go the other way. If you will get what you pay for, you know, if you don't want to spend it, you better hurry up and get out because it will be a problem. You pay now or pay later.
Yeah, and a lot of it is, you know, what's your capital source and what's the money behind your capital source? And I think Noah and myself have a very similar philosophy. And we put money into our projects, and we maintain our projects, and we keep our projects as state-of-the-art as we possibly can. And that's one of the reasons we have the operators we get, because they like partners that will do that. Mm-hmm. But there's opportunity funds out there and high, you know, that are looking for much higher returns that will capital starve a lot of their properties.
Can you actually kind of control your expenses a little bit? Or this is an industry you have to invest your money in.
Well, you have to control your expenses as much as you can. Yeah. Obviously, you know, labor is a large input, food costs are a large input, energy costs and the like. And you have to try to do the best that you can all around. And one of the things that some of the earlier pioneers really figured out, give you an example of food costs, you know, that every time you throw food into the garbage can, you know, those are nickels and dimes that are going into the garbage can. And since you're so highly levered, you know, the incremental revenue or whatever you save on expenses, almost all of it goes to the bottom line. So if you can prevent, you know, if rather than, for instance, doing a cafeteria line, then this is what this one operator figured out, where people will, because it's kind of a pain if you're older to go through a cafeteria line, you take too much food because you don't want to go back.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to hire folks to serve you and say, how much you can have any amount you want. What size portion do you want? If you want more, you want seconds, we'll give you seconds. And their food costs went down like this because they weren't throwing it away. And that was all found money. And so I think those are the kinds of operational things you need to be entertaining, you know, buying, you know, contracts for, you know, forward contracts for energy costs, things like that, where you need to be careful. But you cannot skimp on taking care of your employees. You know, they're not, you know, this isn't a minimum wage business. People are getting health care. You have to take care of the caregivers. And if you don't, you're going to have problems. You will not, people won't stay. You won't be able to retain them. You will not have the kind of service that you need. So you need to be careful with your expenses. But that doesn't mean that you're cheaping out on your employees or your residents or the like. You can't do it that way either. So that's why I say it is a nickels and dimes business, but you got to have a passion for it.
Right. And, you know, one of the things is, you know, this gets back to your earlier point about, you know, smaller operators and larger operators, and they both, you know, have pros and cons. But I think, you know, if you can react very quickly at the property level, you can maintain your margins and you can maintain your NOI even if you have a short-term blip in your census, because you can manage, you know, kind of hours of staff, you can manage ordering your food, and, you know, so if your census drops by, you know, 5% or 10%, you can keep the same NOI for a few months until you build the census back up. And so if you have a smaller or more regional, they're all over that. Some of the larger operators, unfortunately, can't react as quickly as that, so you see a little bit more volatility to their cash flows when there is a drop in census. One thing I don't think you've hit on, and I'm sure Noah would agree with this, is that there's no right one size operator, right? I mean, every operator's model can be slightly different. And so every operator figures out kind of their model. And you can't just say, oh, that's the right model, I'm going to just drop that on every single property.
No two buildings look alike. Even the same operator will tell you, you know, this market is a little bit different than that market. We have to change the menu. We have to, you know, there are a variety of things that even the same operator will tell you we have to manage this a little bit different. So it is really, there's no one size fits all. I think in some ways it's all about customer choice. This business has been about customer choice. And that means operators need to, you know, sort of develop their own style.
And you look at the future, right? And you mentioned the baby boomers. Right now, you know, when we first got into this, you know, it was the greatest generation, right? And that was pretty homogenous generation. They all went off to school together. They all went off to war together. They all came back. They all lived in very similar houses. When we get into the baby boomers, I mean, talk about segmentation and talk about, you know, not one size fits all. You're going to have so many different types of properties, types of operators.
In what way?
When the baby boomers get here, you're going to just have to have so many different type of segments of the industry. And I look at it, it's going to be very similar to like what the hotel industry is now. You're going to have really high-end stuff like the Four Seasons. You're going to have a much more affordable model for people that didn't save as long. We haven't gotten into affordability, but that's obviously a big issue in this segment and in this industry, and it's going to continue to grow as more and more baby boomers start coming in.
Well, let's pick up on affordability, because I know both of you have actually previously told me it's kind of like the holy grail of senior housing. You know, is there an affordability issue when it comes to senior housing?
Yeah, I think there is an affordability issue. I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, first of all, you know, many more people can afford the product than they probably think they can at first, because there's multiple pockets of money that you have. You have, you know, Social Security, you have your retirement benefits, you have any of your investment income that you've saved over the years, you have your primary house, if you have a secondary house, you know, you have cars. And when you're moving from your primary house and you add up exactly what you're spending on your primary house, as far as, you know, how much you pay for your car, how much you get pay to maintain your car, how much you pay for your insurance, how much you pay for your cable, how much you buy for, you know, food every single day, you know, and you start adding up all those daily expenses that people are spending, but they don't realize they're spending it. And that's all inclusive when they go to senior housing. They figure out, wow, this is, you know, more affordable than I think it is. So that's kind of where we are today. But even with that said, you know, prices have gotten to the point where it can get extremely expensive. I mean, you're talking, you know, our average AL rents can be $4,000 to $5,000 in a month, and you get into memory care, it can be, you know, $5,000 to $7,000 in a month. So having a more affordable product is definitely something that everyone's trying to work on. And we're saying, well, why don't we build projects that the entire projects are shared units? And it's kind of, you know, like the old days going to schools or dorms, you know, you have a private bedroom, you can shut your door, there is some privacy, but you're sharing a common area. So you want the common areas to be every bit as nice as, you know, full market rate stuff. But by having those shared units, you're able to bring your cost down 20 to 40% per resident. So you got to kind of try and think creatively like that. And I think there's a lot of operators out there that are trying to come up with a model to appease or to go to a much bigger market segmentation, because historically it's easier to just build to the wealthy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it is true that I think this is very little has really been built for the low to middle income senior. It's been mostly, you know, upper middle to upper income seniors. And obviously trying to find lower price points within buildings, even in the face of that, where you have smaller units or shared units, people have done a variety of things like that. But getting back to the affordability issue, when you start going through numbers and you think about how long people are likely to be and what savings it would take, It is remarkably affordable. And in fact, given how large this baby boom wave is going to be, the concerns about affordability really aren't going to be there. It's the law of large numbers. You know, they're going to have a very large age cohort, and yes, maybe a certain percentage will not be able to afford it, but a vast majority will. And I think there's, you know, another element of this, which is, you know, the length of stay, and if you start trying to replicate the services that you get in our buildings, in the buildings that these operators run, if you actually sat back and said, wait a minute, you're going to have people around 24 hours, you're going to have somebody to cook these meals, and oh, by the way, if there's a storm or if there's a power outage or, you know, if somebody needs a vacation, we got that covered, okay? If you try to replicate that in your home, you can't even come close. And oh, by the way, the quality of what you have is also a heck of a lot better. And because families are mobile and they don't necessarily all live close by and the like, it's almost impossible for families to replicate that.